You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Few realize that the word boycott originates in the anti-colonial struggle of Ireland. Captain Boycott was a British landowner's agent in County Mayo, Ireland, who evicted 11 Irish tenant farmers when they protested the rise in rents. In response, a campaign was launched to isolate Captain Boycott. No laborer would work for him, no local business would sell him anything, and the local postman refused to deliver him mail. This was in 1880. This non-violent tactic of isolation became known as a boycott, and there have been several since that day. The boycott of South Africa against apartheid, the boycott of California grapes in support of unionization of Mexican-American farm workers, and most recently, the boycott campaign against Israel. To discuss this latest campaign, I am joined in the studio by Mordechai Breenberg, a Red Eye Collective member and co-founder of Canada-Palestine Support Network, popularly known as CanPalNet. Good morning, Mordechai.
Hi, Sean.
We often hear the acronym BDS. B stands for boycotts. What do the letters D and S stand for?
Yeah, BDS. I guess it's like with any insider group, things get boiled down to an acronym and people who haven't been introduced to the issue wonder what do those things mean. So as you said, B is for boycott. D is for divestment. And just as an example, many organizations, churches, unions, pension plans are invested in stocks and bonds, etc. So divestment would mean that you would withdraw your pension contribution from support of things which, let's say, the Israeli military or settlements, etc. Sanctions is usually associated with the action of a state or large international organization. So they're very common, actually, today. Israel, the United States, Europe have an enormous number of sanctions applied to Iran, barring trade and so forth. In the case of international organizations, in, I think it was 1974, there was a motion in the Security Council to expel South Africa from the United Nations because of its apartheid regime. And Western countries, England, France, and the United States, triple vetoed that. But the General Assembly of the United States, of the United Nations, suspended South Africa from participation in that General Assembly. And that lasted until the end of apartheid in 1994.
Mm-hmm. Boycott isn't the first tactic people resort to when they're trying to resolve a dispute. Doesn't the grievance have to be very serious before people initiate a boycott?
You're right. It absolutely. It not only does the grievance have to be something of great significance, but also the country or person that is sustaining that grievance, inflicting that injustice on people, usually is intransigent in responding in any way to modifying their behavior. So in the case of South Africa, if we look at grievances, South Africa boycott was started in 1959 and went through to 1994. In fact, I remember being in England in 1959 studying, and there was a boycott of South African oranges. Now, it had nothing to do with oranges per se. It had to do with the fact that there was an apartheid racist structure in South Africa. That was the overwhelming injustice. And people could recognize that as something profound and needing to be remedied. When we look at the case of the grape boycott, California grapes were boycotted for more than a decade, And that was because the efforts of Mexican-American farm workers who were dying of poisoning in the fields suffered to subject to violence and amazingly poverty-ridden wages and work conditions. That grievance was recognized as profound, and the growers were intransigent. So when we come to the case of Israel and the boycott campaign, it is the same thing, really, in terms of the two dimensions. One, that the grievance is profound, and second, that the state of Israel, in this case, like in South Africa, like the California farmers, is completely unresponsive to other appeals. So I could give you some examples of that. In 2005, that was the launch of the Boycott Divestment Sanctions Campaign. It was called for by more than 170 Palestinian community organizations, unions, and political parties. So it was a very popular grassroots-based call. And it came just shortly after the highest court in international sphere, the International Court of Justice, had looked at the wall that the Israelis were building. And the International Court of Justice declared that that wall was illegal, in their opinion. It was unjust, that the settlements were illegal and unjust. That wasn't the first time that this had been raised. And Israel was completely unresponsive, and no actor in the international scene, any of the states, whether it was Canada, whether it was the United States, whether it was the Europeans, whether it was the Russians, was acting in a way to apply sufficient pressure on Israel to remedy the injustice it was perpetrating. And one of the injustices, that the Palestinians identify is the injustice of apartheid. And it means, in the case of Israel, that people who are Jews as citizens of Israel have rights and privileges that people who are not Jews, but even are citizens of Israel, do not have. For very basic rights as to access to land, and the second, access to movement, which is highly restricted for Palestinians. In fact, those who were expelled in 1948-49 have no right to reenter and return to their country. And so these are the injustices, and they're long, long lasting.
The goal of the South African boycott was to end apartheid. What is the goal of the boycott campaign against Israel?
The Palestinian organizations who initiated this campaign put three simple, clear demands. Well, the first is the right of Palestinians who have been expelled from their homes and land over the decades that Israel has existed, have the right to return. It's an international law, in fact. Secondly, that the occupation, referring to the territories that Israel conquered in 1967, in Gaza, in West Bank, in the Golan Heights, end. That occupation end. Israel withdraw from its military occupation of that territory. And thirdly, that there be equality of rights, that a person living in that state, whatever form that state structure takes, whatever boundaries it has, be entirely equal, regardless of their ethnicity, regardless of their religion. It's a demand we would take for granted in Canada. We do not have in Canada or in the United States or in Europe, in law, laws for one grouping of people because of their ethnicity and a different law for other groupings because of their different ethnicity. So it's for equality of treatment. Those are the three demands. They're recognized in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They're recognized in innumerable United Nations resolutions.
The boycott against South Africa was ultimately successful. How do the South African and Israeli boycott campaigns compare?
To say at the outset, there really are no two historical circumstances that are absolutely identical. And one of the things that supporters of Israel keep claiming is that apartheid doesn't exist in Israel. And I guess on that matter, give a very simple and personal example. I'm born in Edmonton. I've lived my entire life in Canada. I am born of a mother and a grandmother who are Jewish. As a result of that, simply because of that, I have the right to go to Israel and live anywhere in that country. A Palestinian, or a child of a Palestinian, or a grandchild of a Palestinian, who were driven out of their homes that they lived in and were born in 1948, 49, or 67 subsequently, has no right to return to live anywhere in that land. If that isn't apartheid based on ethnicity, I really don't know what is. But the similarities are quite striking between South Africa and Israel. The justification for the campaign that there is apartheid and needs to be eliminated is similar. The goals of simple democratic rights and equality is similar. The kind of targets of things, consumer goods, etc., that are boycotted is very similar. And another thing that's very similar is that the Western countries which supported South Africa government against apartheid campaign also support Israel against the boycott divestment sanctions campaign. I was just looking up on the internet, and there was a demonstration, a small demonstration in Brighton, England, only 35 people, calling on Barclays Bank to sever its connections with Israel. Barclays Bank is one of the largest banks in the world, and certainly in England. Well, that's only 7 years since this boycott divestment sanctions campaign began. In 1986, Barclays Bank conceded to withdraw its business from South Africa under a campaign where people were withdrawing their accounts from Barclays Bank, etc., etc., a boycott campaign. And that was 27 years after their boycott campaign. So the question of length of time is certainly a distinguishing feature.
Can you give us some examples? You've given us one, but can you give us some other examples of the kinds of boycotts that have been initiated in the case of Israel?
Consumer products, certainly one, and that's one that individual persons can participate in. In Vancouver, for example, there's a boycott campaign against an outlet called Levan, which distributes only Israeli products, soaps, cosmetic types of things. And it's a kind of worldwide campaign. I was interested, Japan, just recently, a distributor that was handling an Israeli product, cosmetic product, which comes from the mud in the Dead Sea, which is in the West Bank area, under pressure of Japanese solidarity groups with Palestinians, has decided it's no longer going to handle what's called a Hava, is the trade name. So there are many, many consumer goods. There's academic boycotts, and they're not a boycott of individuals. They're trying to sever institutional connections between one institution and another. The University of Johannesburg Senate, which is the ruling body, not just the student council, the governing body of that university, last year severed its links with Ben-Gurion University in Israel in response to this campaign. There's cultural dimensions to the boycott. Many prominent artists have responded positively to requests that they not perform in England. Elvis Costello was one, Carlos Santana, and this campaign of cultural boycott supported by people such as Alice Walker, the Swedish mystery writer Henning Mankell, and so on, other prominent cultural figures. And a campaign which is very important, which is little known in this part of the world, but very well known in Europe. There's a French multinational called Veolia. And Veolia is building a light rail transit system in Jerusalem to really service the Israeli Jewish settlements in the West, the occupied West Bank. And they also are involved in wastewater treatment projects. So there's been divestment from those, and it's been quite successful from Veolia.
As individuals, we can boycott a given product. You mentioned Lavan. The D and the S part of the BDS campaign are a little bit more complex because they depend on larger institutions like corporations in the case of divestment or mutual funds and so forth, and sanctions depends on governments. How can people go about putting pressure on those institutions to achieve the D and the S of the BDS?
Well, for example, in the case of church groups, some of the major denominations, Christian denominations in the United States, in the UK, etc., have investments in various corporations. So now there's a debate in church group due to members of that church feeling the need to act in with a sense of justice on this issue, proposing that they withdraw, for example, their investments in anything to do with Caterpillar, a major corporation which supplies these bulldozers that are used by the Israeli military to level homes and so forth.
There have been serious criticisms of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign by supporters of Israel. What's your response to those criticisms?
I understand those criticisms, I guess, as three-pronged. One is they want to divert attention away from the crimes that Israel's guilty of. So they make the accusation that we'll try and shift the ground of discussion. We won't look at what Israel's doing and why it's worthwhile to and necessary to have such a campaign as boycott, divestment, and sanctions, but consider something else. Put people on the defensive. What do you got against Jews, etc.? That kind of false shifting of the ground. As secondly, it's an effort to silence and intimidate. For example, a food co-op in Olympia, Washington, their membership voted to not handle Israeli goods. So they then were threatened with a big legal action and so on. They got the support of the Center for Constitutional Rights in the United States, and the judge ruled that they were entirely within it on free speech to make such a decision. But anyway, it's a costly effort at intimidation. And lastly, and probably most importantly, it's an effort, this criticism by supporters of Israel is an effort to confuse people about a criticism of Israel being equivalent to anti-Semitism. So they say, if you are going to have equality of rights, if you're going to have right of return of Palestinians, if you're going to end the occupation, then you are destroying Israel. Well, it would be like saying if you end apartheid in South Africa, you are destroying South Africa. You're not destroying South Africa. The white people of South Africa remained with the black people. The relations between the two was the thing that was changed. And it's changed because it's a basic democratic principle that's at stake here. And so the same thing is true in Israel. It's not a project to punish in any way Jews. It's a project to say Jews can live in Israel the same way they live in Canada, on an equal basis with other people.
And where can people find out more information about BDS?
There's a very comprehensive and easily accessible website. It's called bdsmovement.net. And I recommend people check that out.
Okay. Thank you, Mordecai, for joining us today on The Other Side of the Table. I've been speaking with Mordecai Breenberg, a Red Eye Collective member and co-founder of Canada-Palestine Support Network, popularly known as CanPalNet. For more information on the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, you can go to the site that Mordecai just mentioned, bdsmovement.net.